following is an exclusive presentation of News Radio KMAN, your home for K-State Athletics. It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
Derek Young along for the ride today on The Game. John Kurtz, Stephen Schaefer with you. Mitch Fortner getting ready for some high school basketball today. Man, everybody's still basking in the aftermath of the decision to move the Stanford game to AT&T Stadium in Arlington. I suppose when I say basking in it, you're really only basking in it if you enjoyed the move, which perhaps more people do than I thought. More on that later on in the show today, all right? My unofficial poll that was put out on Twitter had a late swing to it. But I welcome in Derek Young from K-State Online right now. You can follow him on Twitter at DYoungRivals. Go check out K-State Online if you want the latest on what's going on with recruiting in particular. I just saw that there's a new commit watch up there today that I was enjoying reading right before I came on the air. But DY, you kind of sat the fight out, and maybe fight is a bit too strong, but you sat the debate out yesterday about the Stanford game for the most part on Twitter, which I can certainly understand because let me tell you, it was exhausting. I probably should have just cut myself off from responding to people before I actually did. But what was your initial reaction to finding out that it was finally official that K-State would be moving that game to Arlington?
Yeah, I did sit it out for the most part, but it's also because it's something that's been rehashed over and over again. So I just kind of felt like it was a little bit of an older argument just being kind of spun up once again. But I give my comments and I stated some of the facts just like you did and Kellis Robinette did. And my initial reaction was the timing is a little unfortunate just because we are still dealing with the ramifications of what COVID-19 has on communities such as Manhattan. So the timing is a little bit unfortunate, but at the same time, Kansas State also has a responsibility to look out for themselves, and they have withstood a financial crisis of their own that is, connected to COVID-19. So while I understand the reticence of some people for having this game being moved, I also totally understand Kansas State going for the money grab in the climate that we are in.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with a $2.2 million net, and that's just out of the guarantee. I mean, who knows how things will work out as far as some of the extras above and beyond that, which you can also make. And, on the other side, you can talk about how different the estimate of $500,000 net for a home game would be if it's going to be a team where you have to pay out a guarantee as opposed to Stanford, where that would not be the case. But the bottom line is they're going to make seven figures off of moving this game. And to me, I mean, I guess I'll just say with money grab, like the term money grab, I understand why it's used there. And I don't think you're particularly trying to like say anything with that. But to me, a lot of this is about just the total package of it. It's about the money combined with the exposure and some of the extra things that go along with that as well.
I would agree. But I think the money grab is probably a little bit more, palpable now after the year that they have had to have. I mean, think about the athletic department. They've furloughed how many people. They've slashed salaries to how much extent. They've cut several different positions to the point where it would be probably malpractice and to a point negligence if they did not take advantage of this spike in cash flow that it will provide.
Agreed. Because that I think is one thing it's just such a complicated thing when you're assessing like how to best financially support the athletic department and the community, because you're right, the athletic department has mouths to feed there as well that they have to worry about. And then how much do you quote unquote owe the community and everything surrounding that goes along with that, the business that comes along with K-State football in terms of an eighth home game, a year with an abnormally large amount of home games here with all of this. That's a really hard thing to try to parse through, and I think it still seems to be the thing I see the most debate about. I guess maybe the best way to approach this is ask you what you've seen just from people on K-State Online who are just real hardcore fans and people who love Manhattan. To me, it seems to be the most common thing that I see pushback to the game is about the financial impact to the community, as opposed to losing a home game, losing competitive advantage by the game being at home and all of that. Does that seem to be an accurate statement?
Yeah, I think that is accurate. And I do appreciate that level of argument, too, because to me, that is the argument that sticks a little bit more than the rest. The fact that you're losing an eighth home game, or you had to go to Palo Alto to play Stanford, but don't get them at home, that doesn't really stick with me as much as the argument for the community. I think that's a better one than the losing the home game. And so it's a home and a neutral is what it turns out to be in the arrangement that they do end up having with Stanford. And that probably, maybe that twists the knife at some folks even a little bit more, because you lost the home game with Vanderbilt as well. So that's two home and homes in a row that have effectively been kind of wiped out. So there, I guess I can understand a little bit of that stuff. And then there was one of the funnier comments or arguments against it to me that doesn't stick at all. It's like, well, if you're going to have it in a neutral site, why play it in Texas and not at Arrowhead? And of course, my initial response was, well, there's no billionaires hosting a classic game in Arrowhead Stadium. That's only happening in Arlington, Texas. So that's kind of how I feel about that. I'll give this kind of question to you, actually. If they didn't have seven other home games, they only had six other home games, would you feel the same way about
it? That's a good question. First of all, to the Arrowhead thing, I've got 2.8 million reasons why it's happening in Arlington as opposed to Arrowhead. I don't think Clark Hunt's ready to shell out $2.8 million to bring anybody to Arrowhead. I think in general, my stance would be somewhat the same. And I know it's really hard. Like, these are almost impossible questions to answer and calculus to parse out here, as I was mentioning with the community element of this, and I don't want to hedge too much. I think that would make it a lot more complicated. I think that would have made it tougher for K-State to do. I think at the end of the day, if I'm K-State and I'm still sitting there in a pandemic year, and I took this actually from Kellis Robinette's article where he had some quotes from Gene. Gene said that the pandemic actually made this more enticing because the athletic department frankly needed the money more. And I know that the community thrives so much off of K-State football, and I know there are businesses out there really, really hurting. But the athletic department, if you are Gene Taylor and you're making decisions for K-State athletics, I think your priority there, your responsibility has to be more toward your employees and the people that you have to go look in the face every single day, and some employees that have been furloughed, and all the things that you need to provide as an athletic director for your athletic department. I would still lean toward playing the game. That would be my answer. It would be more painful, especially because I know the PR angle on it would be even more difficult. But it seems to me like people are so dug in on one side or the other on this that I don't know that a lot of people would really change their tune much based on that. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that statement. I think if I were Gene Taylor and they would only be getting six home games instead of seven, there would be a lot more anguish in me making that decision, because that is probably, that's below average, a number of home games per year, right after they've probably taken the biggest hit of their, career. So it would be harder for me to do. But at the same time, that doesn't change what you just said or what I said, 5 minutes ago, in that Gene Taylor has a responsibility to the people he employs before he has a responsibility to those in the community, like it or not. And especially when some of the people that, you have to say it in the past tense, employed, no longer have jobs, it would be negligent to pass up that infusion of funds.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's very difficult because so many different humanizing factors get involved here. And if you're somebody out there that has a close connection to a business, if you are a business owner, I get how your perspective on that is different. But And that's why it's such a complex thing. These college towns, like the economies around college towns are very complex because there's such a relationship tied in between athletic department, school, football program, et cetera, and what's going on in the community. And everybody is hurting now in the aftermath of COVID. And, I mean, I'm sure this was not an easy decision at all, man. But one thing I think I can utilize you for here that would be particularly insightful, because I don't have this sort of insight, and I think this is a question that a lot of people who are on the opposite side of the aisle of me on this would like to know. You know, I saw some out there that were saying, like, hey, I mean, are we overstating what the recruiting impact is of this game? Like, how much can this game really do? Does this really matter that much? I mean, I will just say we've seen the players react very favorably to this, but I'll ask you, like, how much of an impact does it really have to go play this game in that stadium, in that state?
I would say that the recruiting impact is probably not really hit appropriately by anyone. I think it's being understated by those that probably despise the idea of this game. And I think it's being overstated by some that are, you know, very excited about, you know, the implications of what this game could provide. I think that it's not a zero, but it's also not a 100. I think it has some recruiting fervor to it because you can kind of discuss this game. This game is going to be put on a bigger stage because of where it's being played in a likely TV time slot that it'll get in a network that it'll get. And it's funny because folks are really that don't want the game there. They're like, well, there's not going to be anyone in the stands. You know, Stanford doesn't really have that kind of bite to it. Well, I would agree that Stanford doesn't really have that kind of bite to it, and it's not really nationally renowned at all, and it's definitely lost some of its luster. But my argument would be that it probably needs a little bit of the splash that this game provides then, because if you don't give it a splash at all, then you're probably going to be playing this game on ESPN2 or ESPNU at 11 a.m., and there's zero to that. So this helps, but it also isn't, you know, Alabama versus Clemson, you know, at 8 o'clock on ABC inside AT&T Stadium either, but it certainly helps. And, you know, obviously getting an extra game in a place where you recruit quite often is also a nice help, because, you know, these opportunities could come up a little bit more often, perhaps later on too, and you can recruit off of that as well.
Yeah, I guess that is a big thing I was going to mention. Like, if you're talking to kids from the state of Texas, you'll say, like, hey, look, we're a program that's considered for these types of games back in your home state. Like, LSU's done this now 3 times after it went well for them in coming to play this. Maybe we get invited back here throughout the time that you're playing here at K-State. This is something that we can do. I think there's some appeal to that. And I guess the way I would frame it is, like, you know, this, like, can I tell somebody that K-State playing this game is going to land them a specific recruit? Like, this is going to land you X 4-star recruit? No, but I think this is all a part of a bigger branding initiative and just a bigger package over the long haul of starting to position yourself with a bunch of things like this that can build and build over time and to help create a different brand and move you away from, let's be honest, a very stale, boring brand of football that K-State was left with in 2018.
I would agree. It's a part of a recruiting package that you put together in an effort to boost yourself in that vein. But this by itself, you know, independently, isn't going to move the needle considerably for any specific recruit. I think you laid it out perfectly.
All right, Derek Young is hanging out today from K-State Online. We'll talk more K-State football coming up next. Basketball is paused, but Julius Brents is the latest addition to the Wildcats. He's now here. Saw that courtesy of a really cool video by K-State's creative and social team. Shout out to them. Some new Wildcats arrived, but how legit of a pickup is this? Is this an NFL corner that K-State just got from Iowa? We'll ask DY next. Wow, since when have we had Hit Me Baby One More Time in here as bed music?
I've had it in here for about 3 months or so.
Wow, well,
it's under mine.
You have you have my permission to play this anytime that you fill in for Mitch.
Okay.
Right now. This takes me back.
Does he not like it or something?
No. I just, I'm a sucker for classic, like, this is millennial AF right here. All right, listening to some Britney Spears bed. DY, you Hit Me Baby One More Time fan. I know that you can't hear the music, I don't believe, right now. But we're listening to Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time.
It takes me back a little bit. It's more the 1990s, right? Still at that point. Or is it 2000s?
I think it was like late 90s. It just feels like it's right in like the millennial generation wheelhouse, right? Like we were all growing up listening to Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and all that jazz. You got nothing to add on 90s music? Nothing to add on 90s music?
It's not really my wheelhouse. I listen to a lot of rap.
Okay. I mean, I did too, but eventually I had to get there from pop music, which is where I started. Although I will say, the two first CDs I ever bought, one was Millennium by Backstreet Boys, but the other one was Big Willie Style by Will Smith. So I don't know if that like counts as rap to you, DY. I mean, he didn't cuss famously, so you know it's pretty clean rap. But there was Will Smith in there.
Funny, the first thing I really got into music-wise was actually 50 Cent, so I'll go with that.
Kind of the total opposite. Okay, that's awesome. Derek Young is with us, at DYoungRivals on Twitter. I was just reading, another thing I read today was the breakdown of Julius Brents, who K-State got from Iowa, a cornerback transfer, who I'm very excited about. And I think the thing that jumped off the page to me most about what I read, you're somebody that has deep connections within Iowa, considering your background. Iowa felt like this kid is a potential NFL corner?
Yeah, absolutely. They were not the most excited to lose him.
All right, hang on, Derek. We're having trouble with the connection here. I am going to we're gonna have to get out of Zoom. I will resend you the link here. It felt like it was teetering on the brink of this for a while. Let me I'll resend you the link, Derek. If you can hear me through the jarbled mess that this computer is right now, let me see if we can get this figured out. You know what, Steven, do you have the ability across the way there to log into the K-Man News Zoom account?
I believe I do. Let me get that pulled up for you.
Okay. I may have to. Let me text you. This is live radio here, everybody. Let me text you Derek's email address. That be the easiest way to do this?
Yeah, probably.
Because in the past, when we have tried to do this on the fly, it feels like I've had to restart this computer here to do that, and I don't want to mess with that, so we're going to have to just send you this. My apologies, everybody. This is maybe just a protest from somebody who would actually like the game with Stanford to stay in Manhattan. Maybe there's some interference being run there. Just sent it to you, Steven, so you should be able to email Derek that link. Let me tell Derek. Steven is going to get you on. All right. Best radio that I've ever done is reading through my text to you live on the air as we get this all set up and ready to go. What we started to hear there from Derek, I can fill in some of this for him, is that Brents, coming from Iowa, was considered by Kirk Ferentz and company to be a potential NFL corner. And it makes sense because he has the pedigree of being a four-star corner when he was coming out of high school and played early, played in and started 5 games as a freshman at Iowa, played some last year, had an injury that knocked out a season in between there. And so I'm not sure how you couldn't get yourself juiced up and excited about somebody that was a four-star recruit, has 3 years of eligibility, and Iowa didn't want to lose because they felt like he was a professional corner. And when you throw in Russ Yeast, who K-State has also added from Louisville in the secondary, it just feels like there has been an upgrade, frankly, in the secondary. I don't know how that's going to shake out as far as safety and who may play nickel. That's something we're going to have to enlist the help of Derek to hopefully fill in some of the gaps on that. But, man, when you combine those guys with, I would tell you, one of the better position groups, at least the frontline guys on the roster, with Echo Boydo and Justin Gardner, you're really talking about something in the secondary. So things feel like they're definitely headed in the right direction there. All right, I think we're getting Derek hooked up here. Let's just do this, Steven. Let's just break and then come back, and we'll ask Derek about Julius Brents because technology has failed us, and it feels like this happens now once a week. You're listening to The Game. All right, we're back, this time with some Tupac to bring us in, more DY speed. I think we have everything figured out. Derek Young hanging out here from K-State Online. Follow him on Twitter at The Young Rivals. All right, it sounded like a great answer here on Julius Brents, so I will ask it again. K-State's transfer corner that's coming in here from Iowa. Word on the street is that Iowa felt like he could be an NFL corner. Is that what you're hearing on that subject?
Yeah, that's absolutely what I've heard and kind of what I wrote in that article that you're alluding to. And it's mainly something to feel good about if you're a K-State fan, because if you go back and look at what Iowa has produced in the secondary in the last 5 to 7 years, it's quite a bit of NFL talent has come out of there. And Desmond King, you know, comes to mind, of course, but there's also Josh Jackson, who's with the Packers. And I think Amani Hooker was with the Tennessee Titans. I'm not sure that he still is. So in terms of a coaching staff that realizes what they have, in terms of NFL talent in the secondary, Iowa has certainly proven that over time, and they felt that about Julius Brents. He started 5 games his true freshman year in Iowa City, and it was definitely slated and someone that they were counting on to be a starter for them in the 2021 season.
You know, I mean, the other thing I really like about him is the competition that was there. It sounded like there was pretty stiff competition, relatively speaking, for K-State to beat out for his services. Who are we talking about that K-State had to do battle with?
Yeah, Missouri comes to mind, obviously, and they were a little, I think there was a little bit of a back and forth there between the two schools for his services. So it's interesting, you know, a Big Ten player at Iowa from Indianapolis kind of probably came down to those two schools, but I also think Michigan State was involved, Indiana, you know, where he grew up close to, and then also Northwestern. So definitely was, you know, not a slim list of suitors. He could have gone to a lot of different places. And I have to think, you know, perhaps one of the things that's helped them is the success that they've had in Indianapolis in the transfer market since Chris Klieman was hired. Of course, they've already landed Russ East, who's also on campus already, the former Louisville corner. But James Gilbert was an Indianapolis native as well.
So how is that going to break down? I mean, you bring up Russ East. He's a guy that's played corner and potentially, it sounds like, could play safety. Brents is a corner. You have Justin Gardner, Echo Boydo, T. Denson. I guess T.J. Smith you'd probably consider a safety at this point. Where do you feel like the transfers in particular are going to be sitting position-wise when they get here?
Yeah, that's a bit of a mystery, right, to where all these pieces fall in the secondary, because there's a lot of unknown just because of the way that the 2020 season proceeded. They had to maneuver and shake things up a lot because of COVID and injuries last year, to where to the point that we're not sure what, you know, the position that they ultimately want to play some of those guys. And that's going to factor into where Russ East plays and factor into where Julius Brents plays. If I was a betting man, or, you know, I had to put my guesses on it, I'd say Yeast ends up at safety and Brents either at corner or nickel. And nickel's the biggest mystery of all, right? Because we don't know who's going to play there. Wayne Jones got in a little bit at nickel at the end, but to begin the year, the nickels were, I believe, Will Jones, who's transferred out, and TJ Smith, who ended up at safety before he had a pretty nasty injury. So in terms of nickel, that's the biggest question mark. And you have to wonder, does T. Denson end up making a little bit of a transition to nickel the same way A.J. Parker did, or perhaps even Julius Brents as well? So that's something that I'll pay attention to probably quite a bit in the spring, as who gets those reps at the nickel spot.
It does seem like a good problem to have, though, right? Because they have a number of capable bodies here. I mean, Justin Gardner and Echo Boydo played most of last season as really darlings in the secondary, where everybody was pretty enthralled with how they were playing.
Yeah, they don't have any shortage of corners that they probably feel good about. But when you kind of get a little bit into the depth, you probably have a little bit of questions, because if you're going to make Justin Gardner, Ekobodo, T. Denson, and Julius Brents all corners, which you might not, but let's say they're all corners, those four, then you're running out of players you might be able to put at nickel. Then you run into T.J. Smith, who, you know, is coming off a pretty bad injury, or you run into Wayne Jones, who hasn't played hardly any nickel and has played a lot of safety and bounced around pretty much everywhere a year ago. So that's where the loss of Will Jones probably hurts a little bit. So then if you have to move one of those corners to nickel, and then you probably don't have as many playable corners, at least not right now, before the spring, as you'd like. So they're in a much better position right now than they were a month ago, and that's certainly the case. But there's still a little bit that probably needs solved, and hopefully that they can solve some of those questions by having a regular period of spring football.
Yeah, what do you make of Wayne Jones and where his future really is? Because when he started the 2019 season and was playing at safety, it seemed like there was a lot of real optimism about what he was going to be as a safety. And as you said, now he's been somebody that's played a number of different positions, battled through some injuries, and you're just left wondering what exactly his future is, where his future is in particular.
I would totally agree. And there's a lot of questions around T.J. Smith. There's a lot of questions around Wayne Jones, like you're alluding to. And he's had a very weird and awkward path at Kansas State so far. And to his credit, that hasn't really shaken his confidence or his attitude or behavior within the program. There was a lot of, ruckus in the secondary in the past 8 or 9 months, and some really cases of guys not probably having their head where it's supposed to be. And to be honest, if anyone had a reason or ammunition for that to be the case, it was Wayne Jones, and he was never one of those guys. So that's a credit to him for how things have gone for him, and he hasn't really gone off course. So I admire him for that. But definitely an awkward path. Like you said, a full-year starter as a redshirt freshman in 2019 at safety, 2020 starts, it's the same thing. He's a full-time starter at safety as a sophomore. I think he gets hurt probably with a concussion, I think we're thinking. And he comes back two games later, and all of a sudden now he's not a starting safety, and he's not a backup safety, not the third safety either. Not the starting nickel, but the backup nickel for most of the rest of the year. And I think he got some reps in at safety towards the end just because of how depleted the secondary truly was by the Texas game at the end, the finale in Manhattan. So a very weird and awkward path. And I don't know what that means for 2021. And that's one of the reasons why it's hard to say who's going to play where, because what are they going to do with Wayne Jones? When they moved him away from safety, was that permanent or was that out of necessity? It's really hard to decipher.
As far as the transfer market is concerned, talking here with Derek Young, where does K-State go from here? How many spots do they still appear to be interested in filling via the transfer market?
The working number that I've heard is three more. Obviously, there's probably some flexibility to that. Whether it be a little less, a little more, that's always typically the case. None of those numbers are always rock solid. But I tend to hear three is kind of a working number where you probably see maybe another defensive player. Ideally, that's a linebacker, because that's still a position where I don't feel the greatest about when it comes to the rotation for 2021. I think they have maybe four guys they're comfortable with. They might be more comfortable with it than I am. We'll see. And then I think you're going to see some offensive transfers at some point, even though that's the one side of the ball that is yet to be addressed. Do they add a wide receiver? Maybe. I don't know if we exactly know that yet. I do think they have a spot or two that they can devote to the offensive side of the ball. And I do wonder if it becomes more of a scenario where it's best player available, or maybe they also hunt for an offensive tackle, because that although I think the offensive line improved quite a bit, considerably, was actually probably the most improved position on the football team, which we all knew would probably take place just because they had the most room to improve. They would still be best if they were comfortable enough at offensive tackle to where they could slide Cooper Beebe inside.
And I know that you've mentioned a receiver name. I won't throw it out here. You can find it at K-State Online if you are a subscriber there. But is it fair to say then they feel okay about where they're at receiver, but would add one if there's somebody available that they like?
Yeah, I think maybe you'd add one if it's the right one, right? I think that's typically the case and would kind of fall under the best player available umbrella. I don't think that they feel as bad at wide receiver as what probably fans do. And I think they have a lot of faith and trust in Malik Knowles and anticipate him having a very strong 2021.
Well, I mean, that's music to my ears if it happens. It's hard to trust, but all signs right now seem to be that he is very committed and definitely bought in. So hopefully that pays some dividends. We have one more break here with Derek Young coming up. We'll ask him about linebacker because he just brought it up. It's where he feels worst about on the team position group-wise. I certainly have some big questions. But K-State did get some good news and Cody Fletcher coming back. We'll sort out K-State's linebackers coming up next. Derek Young spending a couple more minutes with us from K-State Online. Cody Fletcher is back at linebacker. That at least helps with having another rotational player there, although may wind up being a starter. Let's just start with Fletcher in and of itself. How big of an impact is it to get Fletcher back in that linebacking core based on what the current situation is there right now?
It's good. Just even if he doesn't start, which I might have an opinion that he will, just looking at the depth chart as it is right now, even if he doesn't, you still needed some senior infused experience in that group, because if he had not returned, then the most experienced and the biggest veteran on the linebacker core would have been Daniel Green, and he's not very old himself. So you lose a lot of age and a lot of snaps and a lot of experience when you lose the likes of Elijah Sullivan and Justin Hughes. It seems like they were closer to 30 years old than they were to 20. So it'll be nice just from that respect to have Cody Fletcher back.
So Daniel Green, Cody Fletcher, Eric Munoz, the transfer from Utah State. And then are we talking like Austin Moore being the next man up? Is that really the group?
Yeah. At this point, the fork would definitely be walk on Austin Moore. And then even after that would probably be another walk-on in Nick Allen. I think both of those walk-ons are likely. Now, this is before spring football. You know, you get those 15 to 20 practices and maybe things change. But I think going into it, you'll see that Moore and Allen both are ahead of Levi Archer and Jay Harris.
Have you heard anything else on Jay Harris? I mean, I know sometimes it's unfair to project too much onto these kids, but I think a lot of people viewed him as the most heralded member of that recruiting class when he came in. He's still young, just 1 year in the program. Definitely a guy that seems to need to add size, but where do you feel like he's at?
Yeah, I think he's still kind of a work in progress like a typical freshman. He's not Deuce Vaughn in terms of being advanced and able to play right away, because it was always thought that he was going to be physically, you know, undersized and underdeveloped when he walked on campus. He could still have the career or the season or seasons that people anticipate, but it's probably not going to happen in year one or year two for him.
So in your opinion right now, the defensive line and the secondary, are they good enough to offset the losses at linebacker and keep the defense about where it was at last year?
Yeah, you'd like to think so. I guess... That's a question I really haven't prepared for, but the defensive line, I think, is probably not as good. I don't know that you can – I think the depth is fine at defensive line, but I don't know that you can say that they're going to have players that are able to supply the same impact that Drew Wiley and Wyatt Hubert did. That's asking a lot. I don't think there'll be a significant drop-off, but I think they're not going to be as good. And in the secondary – I think there is a chance the secondary is probably going to be improved, to be quite honest, just because that position group got worse as the year went on, just because of being depleted and attrition and stuff like that. So the secondary will be better. It's hard to say that the defensive line will be better when we're talking about the two that they are missing. And at linebacker, I'm not really at the point now where I feel like they're going to be better either.
It's a fair assessment, I think, right now. Hopefully, again, we find some things out in spring ball to become more optimistic about, and then if there's another transfer in there at linebacker, that would certainly help too. We've talked all football here. Basketball not happening right now. Kelis Robinette did report, Gene Taylor said, on track at least right now to play the game in Austin on Saturday. Are you picking depleted K-State to beat the Texas Longhorns in Austin, Derek?
No, I am not. And to make matters worse, I think you'll probably have a re-energized and refocused Texas team after the way they lost at home against Texas Tech on Wednesday night.
Probably will not help. Do you feel, though, that there was a fortuitous, these COVID things. I started to call it a stroke of luck. I guess that's not really. Was it fortunate that K-State didn't lose the most winnable game left on the schedule with Iowa State earlier this week?
Yeah, I think it's better to face Iowa State since they can win that game when they're hopefully at more fuller strength.
Okay.
That's the question. I think it was.
Yes, it is. We petered out at the end here with the basketball talk, but that's kind of where basketball's at right now, everybody. Go to K-State Online, subscribe. There's all kinds of great info in there. I mentioned Commit Watch if you want to get the latest on recruiting, a wide receiver transfer name that you could find out potentially. K-State may be in the mix for as well. Derek, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.
Follow him on Twitter at DYoungRivals as well. Hour two of the show is coming up next. I've got to update everybody, I'm excited to, on the change of heart that K-State fans apparently had about the Stanford game being moved to Arlington.